Welcome to Attention Talk Radio, the show centered around paying attention to attention, with your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper.
Welcome, everybody, to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. I'm your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper. I'm here with my co-host, Kirsten Milliken. Kirsten, how are you?
I am doing terrific. I just got back from the CHAD conference where I saw you and everybody else that we know.
Yeah, we had a blast there. We were running around. We were videotaping. We were interviewing. We were sitting through presentations. And it was great to kind of see everybody out there. I know I learned about what. How about you, Kirsten?
I learned a ton. In fact, you know, we were just talking with Dr. Robin as we were preparing tonight, and the very first person I learned from was Dr. Barkley, who Dr. Robin has also done some work and written some books with. So
yeah, he did.
I'm raring to go tonight.
Yeah, he did his normal executive function presentation, which you know that I love, but he also did one on sluggish cognitive tempo, which I thought was great. And then Dr. Henshaw's presentation on the stigma, and then Dr. Katz's presentation on keynote speak the next day on resiliency, all those I thought were spectacular.
Everything that I saw was spectacular. There wasn't anything that really was disappointing. So everybody had something to share, something new for us to learn. And it was also interesting learning in the setting of having just the general public, people who are affected with ADHD, and not just professionals. So people were talking at all different levels. It was terrific.
One of the things that was kind of cool is Chad had asked us to go out there and do some interviewing of the volunteers, attendees, and presenters. And we took some videotape of us interviewing. We've given that to Chad, and they're going to be launching a new website. So who knows? Maybe some of that stuff will be posted in the new website coming in February to kind of help promote next year. So a little bit of Attention Talk Radio influence out there trying to meet the people where they are. We had some really good interviews, which was kind of cool. But we got a lot of fish to fry tonight, as they say. So let me real quick. Today is Wednesday, November the 14th in the year 2012 at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And our topic tonight is Defiant ADHD Teen, Tips from the Trenches. And with us in our virtual studio is Dr. Arthur Robbins. Real quickly, I guess it's already time. Next year, the CHAD conference is going to be in Crystal City, Virginia, which is, I guess, just outside of D.C. on the Potomac River. So mark your calendars. I'm sure it's going to be in November, and there'll be some stuff posted on the CHAD website at chad.org. In addition to that, we are really proud to announce the launch of Attention Talk Video, which happened during ADHD Awareness Week, and I think we've got four videos that are out there. The most recent one we released today was with Dr. Parker on ADHD meds, burn rates, and the therapeutic window. And while I was in San Francisco, we actually shot 10 videos out there, so we've got a lot of really good content coming up. So that's real exciting. And real quickly, I'm going to turn this over to Kirsten, tell everybody a little bit about Attention Talk News.
Yeah, I just want to comment really quickly. It's a good timing that you did that interview with Dr. Parker, because he's actually, his new book is coming out right now.
Yep.
So on ADHD medication. So kudos to you for timing that so well. Attention Talk News is coming out twice a month now, on the 7th and the 21st or 3rd, something like that. And every newsletter has got information about the latest interviews that we've done, as well as our upcoming interviews. We also have some attention teasers, something to get your brain trying to pay attention to things a little bit differently, as well as some videos that are related to paying attention and ADHD. And there's always going to be some written piece of work, too. We're looking for people, professionals and other people who are write well, who are interested in contributing to that, too. So if you know of anybody, or if you're interested and you're listening to this, please feel free to contact us and let us know what you'd like to share. And if it's something that would fit in with what we're doing, you may be in our Attention Talk newsletter.
Absolutely. And then real quickly, if you send that to attention at attentiontalkradio.com. Also, we're preparing a show in 2 weeks that we're going to talk about how ADHD manifests, not just impulsivity and distractibility, but in other ways. And if you've got a story, if you could just record like a one-minute audio, please send it to attention at attentiontalkradio.com. And if it makes some sense, we'll put that on the show too. Right, Kirsten?
And that's true. And thanks for reminding me that there's actually a video in the Attention Talk newsletter
Yep.
that shows you how to do that if you've got an iPhone. So,
And for our listeners out there, if you go to attentiontalknews.com, you can access our archive stuff and actually pull off that video. So if you're not a subscriber, you can go there and get that video and get a little tutorial on your iPhone on how to do that. So,
that's right.
Kirsten, we got to get to the meat of the show. You want to introduce Dr. Robbins real quick?
I do. So Dr. Arthur Robbins specializes in the assessment and treatment of children, adolescents, and adults with ADHD. He has 30 years of extensive clinical and research experience conducting evaluations, treatment, and research, among other areas, in ADHD. He has several books, and the most recent book is Your Defiant Teen, which is being printed on Guilford Press, and that's written with Dr. Russell Barkley, who we're all familiar with. Dr. Robin and I actually had something in common. While he graduated before me, both he and I went to SUNY Stony Brook in New York. So I just wanted to point that out because I like having things in common with people. Right?
Wow. I didn't know that.
There you go. Yeah, we've got a few years between us, but not that many. Right now, Dr. Robin is the chief of psychology and the director of psychology training at the Children's Hospital of Michigan. And I also want to point out, since we just came from the CHAD conference, in 2002, he was inducted into the CHAD Hall of Fame for his lifetime contributions to the field of ADHD. So, Dr. Robin, welcome, and go Seawolves!
Thank you for that wonderful introduction and all of the wonderful work that you're doing with the radio show and the videos. It's terrific.
Well, it's been one of these things that we just kind of start. It all started from a humble beginning because I don't like to write, and it's been kind of fun because we get to talk to people like you, and Kirsten and I get a bird's eye view. We get the best education because we get to ask the questions, so it's a great asset it is for many people out there. Selfishly, we get a great education along the way, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I want to kind of kick things off. The topic tonight is Define ADHD Teens, and I guess I want to kind of begin with the basics. What is defiance? I mean, at its basic, I want to kind of start there and start to build off of that. So can you share us what defiance really is?
Well, defiance is when a parent asks a child or a teenager to do something, and either they don't do what is asked, or they do it incompletely, or they give a lot of attitude to the parent or adult who's asked them to do it, but the task doesn't get done and there's back talk and refusal and acting out, any and all of those.
So
okay, but how is that different than just regular teenage behavior?
Well, that's a really good question. If you look at defiant behavior or not doing what parents ask across the lifespan of children, you'll find that there's a peak of that kind of negativistic oppositional behavior at age 2, and then again at early adolescence at age 12. And so it's how frequently and how much it gets in the way of family function, which makes it the normal defiance behavior that any youngster is going to exhibit versus something that rises to the level where someone like me would get involved.
Well, what I'm hearing is that if the teen is pushing back a little bit, in order for it to be an issue, the parents have to be pushing back too. So isn't it kind of a two-party deal here a little bit?
Absolutely. And with a problem like depression, you look at a child, you talk to them, you observe them, and you can make a judgment just based on what's happening with the child or adolescent. Are they depressed? Similar with ADHD. But as you were saying, in the case of oppositional behavior or defiant behavior, the teenager has to oppose someone, which is usually the parent, although it could also be a teacher. And so it's a two-party situation. Two people are involved. And so really, I prefer to call it oppositional family or defiant family interactions. It really doesn't reside in just one person.
So when a child is born, it kind of grows. Am I to understand that it begins with the environment first? Now, I'm sure a difference in brain wiring, whether they have OCD or ADHD or stuff like that, can contribute it, but fundamentally it begins with the environment. Is that accurate?
Yes and no. Dr. Barkley has put together what he calls, and there's a lot of research to support it, the four-factor model of the development of defiant behavior rising to the level of needing help from a mental health professional like myself. And in that model, one factor are all of the child's characteristics. A second factor would be all of the parent's characteristics. Then you have the environment in which the family lives. And finally, you have parenting practices. So the brain wiring part would be child's characteristics, how the child's brain is wired, and also how the parents' brains are wired. So inheritance, genetics, neurobiology, those are factors one and two in this four-factor model. But the model really says that youngsters and parents need to be at the extremes of negative traits for defiant behavior to rise to the level of clinical significance. So hyperactive children are in such constant motion because they're so full of energy, and that's brain wiring, that their parents have to tell them 100 times a day or more, don't do this, don't do that, don't stop, don't touch, so on.
Mm-hmm.
And if a parent has to give 100 commands a day just because of the way the child's nature is, then the child's bound to not do some of those.
Uh-huh.
And you have a setup. The hyperactivity sets up the situation for defiant interchanges to occur. And
what do you mean by that, defiant interchanges?
Coercive interchange would be the best term. Coercive interchange is simply parent says, do this. Child stalls, says, I'll do it later, not now. Like parent says, get off the video games and start your homework. And child says, in a minute, when I get to the next level. Parent escalates, get off the video games now. Child stalls. It builds up, and eventually either the parent turns the video games off and the child may go ballistic and the parent wins, so to speak, or the parent backs off, gives up, and the child wins. That's a coercive interchange. The coercive interchanges go right to the heart of what I'm calling defiant interactions. And so, again, all families have those, but you know, families where there are extreme characteristics, which is Dr. Barclay's factor one in his model, or extreme parental characteristics, which is the second factor in his model, that causes or predisposes the families to have many, many, many more such coercive interchanges than families where it's more normal and there aren't those problems. The more such interchanges occur, the more you get what I call entrenched negativity in the parent-child relationship. So it's an interaction of multiple factors.
What I love what you said, a coercive interchange. And when I listen to coercive interchange and what you described, there's two parties at the table. I mean, there's the environment and stuff like that, but there's the teen and there's also the parents at hand, because if the parents are really – I mean, there can be a lot of factors on the parents' side that can actually lend itself to this, right?
Right, absolutely. For example, temperament. Temperament is a term we use for inborn personality characteristics that have to do with brain wiring and genetics. If you have a strong-willed child and a strong-willed parent, since being strong-willed is an inherited temperament characteristic, you have a setup for lots of coercive interchanges to occur. If you have a more layback parent and a more strong-willed child is probably going to win out in coercive interchanges. So the characteristics that the parent and child have set up the situation for more or less coercive interchanges to occur. You get millions of them or hundreds of thousands of them over the life of or over the childhood of this young person. You end up with what psychiatrists call oppositional defiant disorder, which I'm looking at as more oppositional defiant families.
Oh, I like that. Oppositional defiant families, because there's two sides to this that evolves into what I guess some people refer to as ODD, oppositional defiant disorder.
Right.
So there's the dynamic that's going on. It's just not the individual, right?
Absolutely. Again, with other problems like depression, anxiety, or ADHD, an individual has a problem, and you don't need two people present to really have the problem. Again, with oppositional defiant disorder, as it's called, if you don't have two people present, you don't have a problem because somebody has to oppose somebody else.
Wow. Well, I got to tell you something, Dr. Robbins, this has been worth the price of admission already. This is, as we peel back the onion, this has been helpful for me. Kirsten, you had a question real quick?
I did. You know, we were talking about this coercive interchange, and I'm not sure if for the listeners it's still clear. What it sounded like you were saying to me was, you know, parent says to the child, turn the video games off. Child says, in a minute. Parent says, do it now. Child says, one more level. And sometimes the parent backs down and says,
right,
fine, I don't want to deal with it anymore. And other times the parent might barge in and just turn the TV off.
Right.
It sounds like, though, it's that mixture of responses. It's not being consistent. It's giving, you know, intermittently giving in, and other times maybe overdoing it in putting the, you know, their foot down. Am I hearing
that?
Am I...
That's part of, again, I'll come back to the four factors. If you have a course of interchange and it recurs many, many times in a family, the child's inborn characteristics, the parent's inborn characteristics, their environment and parenting practices all add together in a one-by-one fashion to mold those coercive interchanges to recur thousands of times. And so your point about parents being inconsistent, that's an example of the fourth factor in Dr. Barclay's model, parenting practices. And so parenting practices make a huge difference in how things are going to turn out. And if you then get to the question of what should the parents in the audience do about this if they have children who are defiant, that is what we could change. The point of this model is to understand you can't change your inborn temperament characteristics too much, either the parents or the child. And if you're really lucky and have a lot of money, you might be able to change your environment, although that's often tough to do.
Mm-hmm.
But what you can change are parenting practices. And so how to help families with oppositional behavior and interactions is to help the parents change their parenting practices so if they act differently towards the children or teenagers, they will get back a more positive response from their parents, from their children.
Wow. Dr. Robbins, we need to go to a break real quick, and this is a great stopping point, so everybody just bear with me. Before we go to the break real quick, for those that are listening, the book that you wrote with Dr. Barclay, can you tell our listeners about that and how they could go access it?
Well, it's called Your Defiant Teen. Dr. Barclay's the first author. I'm the second author, and Chris Benton is the third author. And it's a paperback, and it's published by Guilford Press. But you could find it either at Amazon or at the Guilford Press website. And it's available, I believe, both electronically and in a paper version. And if you want a lot more detail and 10 practical steps for how to implement an intervention to change defiant behavior in teenagers, this book is designed to do that. And actually, one of the motivations for writing the book was for me to have something for the parents I work with to read along with therapy. So actually it functions both as an aid to a therapist and as a standalone.
Excellent, excellent. Everybody, with that, we'll be right back after these messages.
You're listening to Attention Talk Radio. We'll return in a moment. Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
Experience the difference with a top-notch ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is TimeTimer.com.
We are CHAD, the nation's leading nonprofit organization serving the community impacted by ADHD. CHAD and Attention Magazine provide science-based information about ADHD to families, professionals, the media, and the general public. Attention is the only publication in which your paid advertising promotes the mission of leadership, advocacy, research, education, and support for the ADHD community. Interested? Advertise in Attention Magazine and CHAD's website at chadd.org or call 240-487-2314.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody, to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. We're having a great discussion with Dr. Robbins. Before the break, we were talking about what defiance is, and what was cool to me was it's a coercive interaction between kind of two people, and they're citing like four factors in the model. There's the teen's characteristics, the adult characteristics, the environment, and your parenting style. And before the break, what I was taking from your comments, Dr. Robbins, and I want to pause here for a second because Kirsten's got something I know she wants to kind of bring up in a second, so hold that thought, Kirsten. But when it comes to these four factors, your parenting style is the thing that you can probably influence the most. Is that accurate?
Absolutely. And so this is a model that gives hope to parents that even with quite difficult teens, they can get some change back if they change their parenting style.
Now, I have to tell you, years ago before I had kids myself, I got a 17-year-old, 11-year-old, so I was always looking forward to this particular show. I remember my wife and I had a couple dogs, and we went out to two golden retrievers, and we went out to get them trained, and it was really pretty quickly that I learned that the training was not so much about training the dog, but it was training the parents to train the dog. And that level of consistency of saying, hey, this is what we're going to do, and doing it on a really consistent basis, what I kind of discovered is if I could do it consistently, the dog would actually kind of mold into it. But if I was inconsistent, it didn't happen. That metaphor, does it have a place in this space right here? That idea is that the parent learning how to parent on a consistent basis so that the children would respond, is that real?
Oh, that definitely is real. And if you say, what are the two most important dimensions for parents to keep in mind, consistency would fall under the dimension of structure. And structure goes from very little structure, you let your teens do whatever they like, to total structure, you dictate to them. Consistency with a moderately high degree of structure, we psychologists call it authoritative parenting, and so parents need to be consistent. They need to have a moderate degree of structure, but not be dictatorial with teenagers. But I can't help mentioning the other dimension, which is equally important, which is love, warmth, and kindness, going all the way from hostility and coldness up to very loving and kind. And research for many, many decades has shown that parents who are high on the warmth dimension and consistent and moderately high on the structure dimension, that works best with parenting difficult teenagers in terms of how they're going to turn out. But consistency is definitely part of the structural dimension.
So love and that warmth is a big deal, but consistency is also a part of that. So like you can't have one without the other. Is that right?
Right. Well, you can have one without the other, but the outcome isn't going to be that good, because when dealing with youngsters who are very oppositional, despite the difficulty of maintaining love and warmth, those parents who are able to do that along with the consistency get the best results.
Yep. And Dr. Robbins, I know I've got a lot of information here that defines some interactions kind of in the trenches in detail, and we're probably going to have you back for a sequel show because there's a lot of really good stuff that's there. But so I'm telling everybody, I'm already precursing. We're going to have to do another sequel to the show to get into some more meat of it. But before we do, I know Kirsten, you had some comments, because when you're dealing in an ADHD household and we're talking about consistency, that can be some difficulty. So Kirsten, I know you have some questions around this.
Well, I was just thinking, you know, I've got ADHD, no big secret, and I have a son who has ADHD, also no big secret, maybe to his friends it is, but and one of the things that I find between us and also with clients that I work with is if you have two people in a family who have ADHD, that it's just kind of a recipe sometimes for conflict, because, for instance, you know, a lot of people with ADHD are very impatient. And
right.
They want everybody else to move quickly, say whatever they have to say, spit it out.
Right.
But at the same time, they tend to be very verbose themselves.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, while I may be rambling on, my son wants me to get to the point, which irritates me, and it goes back and forth the other way. So I have to think that if you've got a parent and a teen who have wiring for this kind of oppositional family, you know, defiant disorder, that kind of dynamic would also come into play.
Absolutely.
Can you tell me more about that?
Well, I think the best way to approach that is, as a psychologist, if you work with adolescents with ADHD and their parents and oppositional behavior, you have to come to work with ADHD across the lifespan. So as a psychologist, I work with adults with ADHD and as well as their children with ADHD. So families where one parent and a teenager both have ADHD and impulsivity and are quick-tempered and highly reactive and explosive, I will work with the parents together, because it impacts the couple, even if, and that's another whole topic, ADHD and relationships for another show if you want to do it. But I work with the parents and helping them to understand how the partner with ADHD, how that's impacting his or her parenting, and teaching them self-control strategies, organizational management strategies, various ways to, with or without medication, depending upon whether they choose to do that, to deal with their own ADHD so they could be consistent in parenting. I may be helping them to develop, to use lists, to use various electronic technology-based reminders, smartphones, other things, whatever they have available to them, or it could be as simple as Post-its and kitchen timers. And after I've, in a family like that, after I've helped the couple and the spouse with a partner with ADHD to get a handle on their own ADHD, only then am I going to stand a chance of being successful in helping them to parent consistently with their teen with ADHD. So you have to take a whole family systems view in such cases and have to first help the parents, and then help with their own ADHD, and then help them to help the teenagers. Hopefully that makes some sense.
Does that help to have more empathy for their teenager if they have had to deal with their own ADHD first?
Sometimes that's the case if it's dealing with ADHD, but hot-tempered, explosive, highly reactive parents, those characteristics don't seem to give them more empathy for their children who have the same characteristics, unfortunately.
It sounds like they're kind of reacting, like
yeah.
emotionally reacting, which goes back to, and I have to do, if you're listening to the show, it might be worth two things. One, Dr. Barclay's new executive function talks about ADHD is a self-regulation issue, not so much an attention issue, and he really thinks that emotions should be brought back into the diagnostic criteria. We did a show with him in March of 2010, talking about the impact of emotion on ADHD, and if you're listening to this, I really think it kind of dovetails. You might want to go back and listen to that because emotion is very much a part of it. And also, last July 4th, we did an interview with a 17-year-old from her perspective, Beth Taylor-Kloss, what's it like to live in an ADHD household? And that show is actually particularly telling because in the show specifically, I can remember things get wheeling out of hand when the drama really kind of hit and the emotions kind of hit. And Dr. Robbins, I'm hearing is if that emotion kind of sparks both on both sides and they both react to it, this thing can spiral into Never Never Land.
Absolutely. You could look at emotion as the raw material or data, the raw data which is going on out there. So, again, any of us trying to help such families first have to help the parents get a handle on their own issues, ADHD, and sometimes their own relationships so they could be consistent. And only then can we really help them be more consistent with their youngsters. And I totally agree, ADHD, at least what we tend to call the combined subtype, is, as Dr. Barclay said, a problem of self-regulation. People have also called that executive functions, a disorder of executive functions and self-regulation. And so when we're trying to help families, in essence, we are teaching parents and teenagers better self-regulation over their emotions, over their tempers, over their thoughts. We're trying to help them give thinking a chance to guide action. I think that's a phrase Dr. Barclay uses a lot, that in ADHD, thinking does not sufficiently guide action.
Absolutely. Well, what I'm really liking about what I'm learning a lot here is that this dynamic going on, it's just not confined to the teens. And I like the four the model is the teen characteristics, the parents' characteristics in the environment. What you really have control over is the parenting style. And we've talked about this stuff, and Dr. Robbins, I need to run to a break here in a second. When we come back, I know you have a lot of tire hits the road stuff, and we're going to have you back for another show, but I do want to touch base on some of the fundamentals. So, again, before we do, those that are interested in getting the book, can you share with our listeners again how they can access it?
You can find Your Defiant Teen on Amazon, on the Guilford Publications website, and again, it's called Your Defiant Teen. It's a book for parents. Russell Barker is the first author. I'm the second author, and it's a paperback, and it's available electronically and in print.
Right, with that, we'll be right back after these messages.
Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
We are CHAD, the nation's leading nonprofit organization serving the community impacted by ADHD. CHAD and Attention Magazine provide science-based information about ADHD to families, professionals, the media, and the general public. Attention is the only publication in which your paid advertising promotes the mission of leadership, advocacy, research, education, and support for the ADHD community. Interested? Advertise in Attention Magazine and CHAD's website at chadd.org or call 240-487-2314.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is TimeTimer.com.
Train your brain with Brain Train. ADHD impacts grades, relationships, and the quality of life for your kids. Parents now have a new way to improve the lives of their ADHD child without using meds. Brain Train is designed to exercise your child's mind, to train it to work differently and efficiently. Learn how Brain Train can make a change by training your child's brain. Visit Brain Train at www.brain-train-adhd.com for more information today.
You deserve the best-trained ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
You're listening to Attention Talk Radio.
And now, back to the show.
Welcome back, everybody, to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. We've got Dr. Robbins in the house, and I can't thank you how much I'm learning a ton myself on this particular show. We were talking at the top of the show about what defiance was, and that it was kind of a give-and-take thing. We talked about the different factors and really that parents actually are in control. One of the things that I always have to remind myself when I'm dealing with my kids is that their brain's it's developing. My 11-year-old's got an 11-year-old brain, not a 49-year-old brain. I have to make some adjustments to that. And as I look at the things that you've laid out, Dr. Robbins, it's really the parents really have to take the bull by the horns and realize it's a coercive relationship. If you're going to impact that, it really kind of starts with you. And I know that this one of the strategies that I've seen you kind of talk about a little bit is, you know, you got to ignore the small stuff. You need to be kind of consistent. Start with positive incentives before, like, negative punishments. Can you just kind of frame this, like, the general strategy? And, again, I think we want to have you back to kind of, like, talk about practically how it works. But can you just kind of set the stage for us here a little bit?
Right. Parents take the first step and then try to get a reciprocal positive change back from their youngsters. And basically, the strategies are, first, use an activity that we call one-on-one time to break the logjam of negativity. Second, you learn how to give commands appropriately, learn how to praise appropriately, and as you said, ignore small things which aren't such a big deal. Third, learn how to use incentives effectively to modify behavior. And fourth, and only after doing all these other steps over a number of weeks or even months, would any punishments be added, because it's always incentives ahead of punishments. And fifth, after going through those steps, then learn how to do mutual problem solving, parent and teen together in the room, learning to resolve their differences through steps of problem solving. And after that, work on changing communication, replacing put-downs with more positive ways of interacting, change communication. And finally, figure out how to have more reasonable expectations, parents of teens and teens of parents. Those would be the major steps.
Wow. Well, I know there's a bunch of jumps out. One is the thing that one-on-one times on the front side, and I can remember this. That sounds really pretty easy. It's sometimes difficult to execute, and I know myself, my older son, and I were in Boy Scouts, and I got to tell you, it's hard to get away, but he and I have backpacked probably about 500 miles on the Appalachian Trail, and there's you get out there on the trail walking 12 miles with a backpack over 8 hours. And, you know, I got to tell you something. The commercial ends at some point in time, and we got into conversations that we absolutely never get involved with in the house.
It sounds like you had an amazing experience. Did you want to go ahead?
As a parent in the 21st century, it's coming at you 100 miles an hour. Just take that time and get out there and do that is tough. But I got to tell you, never, ever, ever have – we had conversations that we'd never have in the house just because of the one-on-one time being out there with nothing to go. Like I said, the commercial kind of ends at some point in time, and you're like kind of a peer, and it's incredible. It was great one-on-one time, and it's something that I treasure. But as a parent, I know that it's difficult out there, but it's something that you got to kind of stand up for. So, Dr. Robbins, you want to comment on that?
Well, what we're asking parents to do to break the logjam of negativity is a lot more modest than that. What you did was terrific. We're asking parents to take 15 to 20 minutes 4 to 5 times a week and invite their youngster to do an activity of the youngster's choice, and don't direct, don't command, don't order, don't criticize, play the game or do the activity any way the youngster does, but just 15 to 20 minutes 4 to 5 times a week, totally non-judgmental, have fun together. So it's much more modest than what you were talking about, but you'd be amazed how many families have a hard time finding 15 to 20 minutes, even 4 to 5 times a week, with no cell phones, no computers on, no anything, and really doing it as the youngster would direct it. And if the teen refuses, which many teens would, to do anything with parents, to just wait until the teen's doing something you know they like and join them without making a big thing out of it and say, show me how to do that. So one-on-one time is really quite modest, but if done week after week, the effects are sometimes dramatic.
Awesome. Well, you know, another thing that jumped out at me in those points is number 5 is mutual problem solving with your team. And Kirsten, I think, were you at the Jeffrey Katz presentation in San Francisco?
I actually missed that one, but I'm hoping that you're going to tell us about it.
Well, it was interesting because he talked about clinical side of it was speaking up from a motivational side in different levels, and it kind of got to mutual problem solving with the team, where you kind of sit down, you identify a little bit of a problem, and then you do a little bit of brainstorming to kind of figure out really what all the options are, and then you choose, which is really interesting because it's very akin to some coaching techniques. I'm interpreting that, Dr. Robbins. Is that an accurate assessment of how that works?
Yeah, that's exactly how it works. Sit the family. If I'm teaching families to do this, I have them sit with me. I say I'm going to be like a coach or a stage director. Step 1 is define the problem, as you said. Step 2 is brainstorm a variety of alternatives. Step 3 is evaluate the alternatives and pick one that everybody can live with. Step 4 is plan the details for implementation, which is crucial for families with ADHD members. And then they go and carry it out, come back the next week. Step 5, which doesn't happen until the next week, is verify that the outcome was as predicted. If so, great. Continue it. If not, figure out what went wrong and fix that. So those would be the steps of problem solving, just about the same as what you described that Dr. Katz talked about.
I can't help but chime in. This is a coaching technique that I learned years ago at Central Coaching Training Institute, is when you sit down and you talk about perspective, number one, you have to get rid of outcomes for a second, because everybody will, if they're judging the outcome, it gets in the way. But if you could even take a look and say, what would Daffy Duck do, or Elmer Fudd, or Marilyn Monroe, or Ronald Reagan, or what would a tree do? If you can let go of the outcomes and you can actually stand in character, it's almost like acting, if you will, where you stand into character and you start to blurt some stuff out. That's organically how you can come up with some amazing ideas if you're not attached to the outcomes by something. If if a kid can say, well, what would Daffy Duck do? That is an amazing tool for brainstorming, as silly as it might sound, to get different ideas on the table. And when you've got like 60 of them, it's amazing how aliens from space can come up with a brilliant idea that nobody thought of. And then you flush that out and realize that actually you can kind of get to the outcome. So I'm just kind of sharing that as an aside, because that's a coaching technique that we actively use sometimes. If we can keep those that we're working with from judging the outcome, because that's what gets in the way, because it kind of shuts it all down.
Well, yeah, you can't evaluate. You have to just suggest. I agree. It's a coaching technique, and there's a lot of similarity between coaching techniques and cognitive behavior therapy techniques. But the brainstorming goes way back to the 1930s and 40s with a business person named Osborne who developed brainstorming for the business world long before the mental health community took it up.
Wow. We have a limited amount of time, but I do want to come to you because you laid out one-on-one time, the commands, incentives, then negative incentives, and then the problem solving, et cetera. But I want to kind of go back to the incentives. It's kind of counterintuitive, I think, for a lot of adults when you first start to deal with a situation is to catch your teens doing things right and provide positive incentives. Kirsten, from your perspective, do you find most people jump to the negative side or the positive side first?
Well, I think in general for parents, it's always easier to have a negative reaction when a child's having behavior that's unwanted. It's definitely a much more difficult, and you have to be very thoughtful when you're trying to catch them doing something good. So I don't know, Dr. Robin, I'm sure, has a lot more experience with this, but I used to even tell parents, you know what? If you ask your child to set the table, you might think it's a given that they know which side to put the fork and the knife on. But if they even do that and you're trying to break the cycle of negativity, sometimes that's where you've got to start from.
Oh, I would agree. And the whole intervention is really step by step. So if they haven't had the positive experience of one-on-one time, they won't go through the next step, which is the spontaneous praise. So it's catching your child or teenager being good, but that's praise. That's not using other incentives. Other incentives come later on. So we say 5 times a day, find a reason to praise your youngster for any little thing that they're doing that you like. And as many times a day, find something minor to ignore. But again, that's praise. Other incentives really come a little bit later on.
Well, Kirsten, I got a compliment. What you just said was brilliant. You might say set the table and assume that your child knows what to do, but I got to tell you something. I've caught myself a couple times thinking I thought they knew what to do and realized that they didn't really know it. And I just want to kind of access that a little bit because, again, sometimes we infer a lot, and I mean they're growing minds. I mean they don't necessarily know all the time, particularly in this day and age because it's running 100 miles an hour. Sometimes everybody doesn't really sit down and teach the skills and stuff to them to do that. So great question. We just have a little bit of time left with about a minute to go. Dr. Robbins, do you have any final comments or anything that you'd like to share? And again, we do need to get you back because there's a lot of tire meets road stuff that we're not even – there's a lot of material that we're not able to get to, so we'll have to have you come back. But with what we've had so far, any final, like, thoughts that you want to share?
Well, first, parents who have oppositional youngsters, have hope. It can change. You can get change by changing your parenting style. You will probably need the help of an outside objective professional who could take you through steps like the ones we started to talk about today. But there is hope. Things do change. There's evidence from research that the type of intervention we talked about today helps many, not all, but many families.
Awesome. And Kirsten, any last comments?
I don't. Sometimes as practitioners, we kind of feel like we're in a vacuum because we're not always having these conversations out loud. And I certainly haven't written any books on this. And so a lot of the thoughts that I'm hearing from Dr. Robin, and I know that I've read in Your Defiant Teen, the book, I appreciate because it's a oppositional defiant disorder to me in the area that I live in. Always seems like a cop-out because it gets put back on the teen, and hearing you say now and in your book, this is something we have to bring back to the parent, that we have to start there, that they have to start with their parenting style, is, I think, monumental as far as looking at really how we need to approach this problem and this diagnosis. So thank you very much for coming on and talking about this tonight.
Well, you're welcome, and thank you very much for having me.
Well, everybody, thank you so much, Dr. Robbins. We'll be in contact for another show. And with that, everybody, come back next week for another great edition of Attention Talk Radio. Take care.
Bye-bye.